Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the ships to the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th of September, Anno Domini 2013. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here's some news. We're hurtling headlong into our 25th year on the air. We just celebrated our 24th anniversary 4 days ago. We started on the 3rd of September, 24 years ago. And here's some real news. You can give us a call, by the way, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. While I read the news, the next version of Android will be called KitKat. And will feature a first-of-its-kind promotion with the chocolate bar. Google's Sundar Pichai left the naming news slip in a coy tweet on Tuesday, and Google has posted an official KitKat landing page to confirm. Pichai also said there are now more than 1 billion, that's billion with a B, activated Android devices in the world, an expected but significant milestone. What will Android version 4.4, that's why they opt for the cute dessert monikers, contain? Google's landing page hinted at a greater accessibility for the world's biggest phone operating system. It's our goal with Android KitKat to make an amazing Android experience available for everybody. And a new twist, the name for the phone upgrade is also a promotional campaign. Branded KitKat bars with labels showing an Android robot mascot chomping down on the candy are set to offer the chance to win a Nexus 7 tablet or Google Play credit. The KitKat brand is owned by Nestle and made by Hershey's in the United States. A spokes individual for Google said the company came up with the idea for the tie-in and approached the candy maker. There hasn't been an option with the previous Android versions, which were named after generic sweet treats. Cupcake, donut, eclair, Froyo, gingerbread, honeycomb, ice cream sandwich, and jelly bean. Google has made a custom of mounting large statues of each namesake in front of the Android team headquarters in Mountain View, California. The BBC reports that, in part to preserve the surprise, some at Google had actually used a different code name, Key Lime Pie, internally and with partners. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. The next Android version, KitKat. And the choices are brilliant idea, interesting, meh, and stupid idea. So far, we have 28 votes, and most of you couldn't care less. But I know some of you will have more to say about this, pro or con. So if you check down the right-hand column, about halfway down, you'll see fascinating stuff. Under that is a link to the forum. The second forum on the list is the poll forum. And if you look at 7 September 13, the next Android version is KitKat. You can add in some of your own stuff.
So now the next question is, what is L going to be?
Right.
The next, letter.
Maybe it will be Lime-Aide or I don't know.
Limburger.
Yeah, there you go.
Sweet treats, yep.
There you go. Well, apparently what happened was they actually went to Nestle, I guess. Nestle. And said, we would really like to use the name KitKat for our next version. And apparently immediately somebody at Hershey said, only if we can do a tie-in.
Yep.
Pay us, please. Pay us.
Yeah, there was a cute Joy of Tech cartoon I'll posting in a moment. Little kid gets his new KitKat bar with a Google Android on it. Mommy, I'm scared. There's a ghost. Oh, right. Don't be silly. It's just an Android. So I shouldn't worry that a Empire Set, an omnipresent technology company that knows everything we do online and with our phones, is joining forces with a multinational food corporation that has a long history of nefarious activity, including child labor, the promotion of infant formula, overfeeding, rainforest deforestation, price fixing, and whose CEO once said the idea of water as a basic human right was extreme.
Yeah.
So mommy says, we're scared too.
So it should be interesting. I'll be personally interested in seeing those tie-in things. They're going to sell an awful lot of Kit Kats if you could win a Nexus 7 or Google Play credit. I'll tell you that right now. They're going to sell a lot of Kit Kat. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Terry from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Terry. What's up?
Well, I just have a question for you about my computer. I'm not really in. I just do Facebook and emails on computer.
Sure.
My son gave me a little laptop a couple years ago. And anyway, a couple weeks ago, the sign came up on the screen. It kept saying your Norton antivirus is going to expire and you need to renew your subscription. And it kept going like 14 days, 13 days. And then I didn't do anything because I never subscribed to it. It just, you know, it was just Norton antivirus in one of those corners.
You probably got a subscription when you bought the computer.
Your son probably put it on.
Oh, okay. So I do need to renew it because now...
Well, you need to have something, yes. Whether it's Norton or something else, there are free antiviruses that are also very good. I would start... However, by talking to your son about this.
Okay. Well, he's out in California.
Well, but do we have phones now?
Yeah. But can I just want to ask you one more question? Is that now I can't get on the internet and I can't get Facebook or anything? It just
did the antivirus? Did you wait to call us until after it hit zero?
Well, yeah, because I called Time Warner because I thought maybe it was Time Warner and they tried to turn it on and off. And then they said, no, you must have a virus.
Yeah, you probably do at this point.
Yeah, I don't...
Since Norton expired, it's not keeping you safe from the attacks on the internet.
What you need to do is scrub off that virus. The best way to do that is to dance the security tango. The problem is you can't get on the internet. So what you're going to have to do is find a friend who has internet connectivity...
Uh-huh.
To go to securitytango.com and download to a CD or a thumb drive or who cares, all of the programs for the Security Tango. Then run them on your machine. There'll be several reboots involved in that, and the last reboot should probably get you back on the internet.
Oh, SecurityTango.com.
You got it.
And then you can decide if you want to use one of the other antivirus companies or if you want to resubscribe to Norton.
Right. There are several antivirus programs that are free listed in the Security Tango. And you can certainly use one of those. We always encourage people to pay for those because it helps encourage the makers to make more. But you can also use them for free if you prefer.
Oh, okay. Because the Norton, it said on the screen, $49.95.
Yep.
Right. Norton is one of the large commercial companies that sell the antivirus. There are other companies that have free home licenses, usually because they sell a commercial version to companies. So they give you the home version for free because the companies are paying for it.
Oh, okay. Well, securitytango.com. Okay. Well, thank you, because I'll do that. That'll be great.
Okie doke.
Thank you so much.
Good luck, Terry.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, a lot of people don't notice when they get a new computer that it often comes with a subscription to an antivirus company. It's usually a 30-day or 60-day subscription. In her case, her son might have bought a one-year subscription, because usually when you pay for the subscription, they're at least a year. And so you don't notice that may be expiring, and then you're not protected anymore from viruses because it has expired.
Right. Norton does nicely keep telling you it is about to expire, and if any of you are also getting that, it would be a great idea to not wait to actually upgrade now and not wait for it to expire as Terry did, which will sometimes mean you immediately get a virus that takes you off the internet.
Although I haven't heard of one offhand, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are viruses that put up fake messages that you're expiring and click here to renew.
Well, yeah.
Never click here to do anything.
Right.
So if your Norton subscription is expiring, go to semantic.com.
Right.
Type that in yourself. Never click on a dialog box because it's very difficult to know if that's a real message or a fake message trying to trick you.
Right, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
How you guys doing today?
We're doing great. How are you doing?
I just wanted to inform you that we lost a longtime listener to the show this past week, Jim from Greece, not the Jim that called last week with the root kit, but the other Jim.
Oh, how sad.
And I thought you guys should know he listened every week, and he would call and tell me, you know, I heard you on the show, and I call and I tell him I heard you on the show. So he's a longtime listener, a father to one of my best friends that I grew up with. So I just thought you guys should know that we lost.
Thank you so much. That's
a really loyal listener.
I hate to hear that, but thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, I think I had mentioned last week that we've been on the air long enough that some of our earliest listeners have started passing. It's a sign we're getting old.
Yeah, we are. And happily, I can announce that I was visiting with Bob Smith this week.
Oh, good.
He says hi to everybody, and he's working on getting better. As you may have read in the paper, he had some issues, but he's working on getting better. And he says hi to everybody in the Soundbites family. So there's some good news on top of that.
Both of those?
Yeah, we got both of those. So the big thing about viruses is they just, well, malware in general, whether it's, we use the term virus loosely now.
Actually,
it makes some of our friends crazy because very few of them are really viruses anymore.
And technically, viruses are on the downturn, and it's malware trying to steal your identity and credit card that's
right.
Rising.
Right. But, it is what it is. And the really interesting thing about them is that they just get trickier. A lot of the things that are out there that were created in the web particularly are designed to make it convenient for us to do things and for programmers to do things on the web. So you have JavaScript and all of that kind of stuff, which makes it easy for them to do really cool effects on your computer. Well, JavaScript is a programming language, and as with so many programming languages, it can be turned to the dark side. And that's where a lot of this stuff comes from. If you don't turn off JavaScript, and you don't turn off Flash in particular, golly, I hate Flash.
And Java itself.
If you turn off all those things, the likelihood of getting a virus just by surfing the web goes way, way, way down, except, of course, now we have HTML5.
Right.
Although that's still JavaScript. So, but if you do that, you might as well be surfing with a text surfer.
Yeah.
Links or one of those.
A lot of websites just don't work without JavaScript on.
Right. With JavaScript or Java or Flash or any one of 100 other things. So it's a real catch-22. So the best thing you can do is to make sure that your antivirus and all of that stuff are up to date. Scan your machine every single day, and those are the things that will help to keep you safe.
And most of the modern browsers now will have site-by-site Java allow. So you turn off Java all the time. But on this site, I need to have Java on, so let it run on this site. And the browsers will warn you if Java is trying to run an applet.
Right.
Unfortunately, too many people just say okay without realizing what's actually happening. So the bad guys have taken the convenience that programmers have made and exploited that for unsophisticated and novice users.
Yep. And again, going back to that, we were talking earlier about we don't know of a virus yet that says Norton 15 days, Norton 12
yeah.
days, but that could happen. We see that a lot. People who have gotten a message on their machine that says, oh, the FBI has determine that you've got a problem on your machine. So click here or call this number.
Or send us a $300 money order and we won't come and arrest you.
Right. Or they get a phone call. Hi, this is tech support. Tech support who? Microsoft.
Okay.
Okay.
Or, yeah, Windows tech support. There's even Apple ones around now, too.
Yeah, and there are Apple ones around, too. And they just want, you know, simple information like your name, your password. They want you to download a program so that they can check your machine.
Yeah, give us. We've determined your computer's infected. Give us remote access, and we'll clean it. And oh, by the way, after they're already in your computer, it's $300 to clean it.
Right. Oh, and by the way, if you want to know more about this, and more about a whole bunch of other things that I'm going to be talking about, I will be at Apple Cider this week, Wednesday night. Every year you have this, and the same night there's a big dinner from one of our vendors. Invite me to this, yeah. Well, I said yes, so I suppose it's my fault, not yours.
Well, you probably won't go on until about 8:30.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. And by the way, that's this Wednesday at
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock at
East High School.
There you go. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Go.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We had an off-air question during the break. What is Apple Cider? We didn't get quite to it while we were on the air. But Steve, who is a big noise emeritus, I believe, is his actual title.
My actual title, yeah. So Apple Cider is the local Apple users group. We've actually been around 35 years. We're celebrating our 35th anniversary. We had a big cake at our picnic a couple months ago.
You guys took the periods out.
Yes, we did. That was, oh my God, that was a six-month argument.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up a tough one.
But you noticed.
Yeah, of course I did.
Yeah, so it was an acronym, you know, like any good Mac product, you start out with a cool name.
I remember what it stands for.
It's a little redundant we used to say Rochester Apple Cider, but then there's two Rochesters.
Right.
Yeah.
Computer Information and Data Exchange of Rochester.
Yeah, and our
how long did it take you to actually come up with that? Days, probably.
Probably, yeah. I wasn't there. I started, when did I start? 85, I think. So I missed the first 10 years.
A Johnny come lately.
Yeah. But it's the Apple Users Group. We meet the second Wednesday of the month at East High School. So our next meeting is this coming Wednesday, September 11th at 7 p.m. And we're in the forum room. So if you're familiar with East High School, it's at Main and Culver. But if you go to the next block east is Ohio Street, and there's a giant radio antenna. If you park in that parking lot, that takes you right into the forum room very easily.
And I will be the main speaker. Talking about, I don't know, something.
Security issues.
Oh, yeah, security issues.
And then next Saturday, so the Saturday following the main meeting, we have a beginner's Q&A meeting that also meets. That's going to be at Coworking Rochester downtown. So as soon as I get off the air here, I rush over to there and have that meeting.
And I imagine that in all cases, the tenor of the meetings has changed drastically over the years as new equipment comes out, and I suspect there's a lot less computer and a lot more tablet.
Yeah, we're seeing more and more people with tablets, and iPads and iPhones, and a lot of excitement over the new technology coming out. But we do have some longstanding members that have been around from the beginning, so we try to keep some of the older stuff available as well. We have a website, applecider.org. I posted a link on the Soundbites website as well. And the concept of a users group actually has been around in that 30-40 year range. Back when there were no computer stores, the Homebrew Computer Club in California is where personal computers really got their start. People tinkering, like Waz, who did the original Apple One, Altair. What was his name that did the Altair? Metcalf? No. No, that was Ethernet. Bob Metcalf.
No, nope, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. So all those old, so all the people started these user groups. So here in Rochester, we have Apple Cider for Apple users. We have the Rochester Computer Society for Windows users. The Lugor group for Linux users that we've mentioned several times. And so there's a lot of different groups around town for people to find their specialty.
Yep. And going along with the Apple thing, on Tuesday, Apple sent official invitations to a September 10th event at which it is expected to unveil the latest version of the iPhone, possibly in five or six colors other than its traditional black and white. This should brighten everyone's day, the typically cryptic invitation read, under a graphic depicting pastel-colored circles surrounding a stark white Apple logo. Apple, which is making a focused effort to win over consumers in Asia, where rival Samsung Electronics Company Limited and other Android manufacturers dominate, or, as John Lurie said to me, Samsung is eating Apple's lunch. said in the invitation it will host a breakfast and presentation at its Cupertino, California headquarters. Apple did not specify as to what the presentation will be about. However, supply chain sources said in June that Apple is expected to launch two new models this year, widely referred to as the Apple iPhone 5S and maybe 5C, although I suspect that's people who believe the C would stand for cheaper. with new fingerprint technology as well as a cheaper version in plastic casing. Analysts say the company needs a cheaper phone to drive faster growth in markets like China and India and to counter Samsung's edge in having a wide range of devices at varying prices. Growth in Asian markets is seen as key for smartphone makers. China's smartphone market, for example, is set to grow 48% this year, outpacing a global increase of 31%, according to industry forecasts. The problem for Apple, of course, is that much of that growth is at the lower price point where Apple does not have an offering at all, much less dominate. So does a cheap iPhone entice you? A less expensive iPhone entice you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that in America, when you buy a cell phone, you're getting a huge subsidy from the company.
Right.
So you can get an iPhone 4S now for free, which sounds cheap. But that really is dependent on you signing up for a two-year contract and with your carrier, and then they know you're going to pay them about $2,500 over that 2 years.
Right.
So that's why they're giving you a discount on the phone. If you want to buy a new unlocked iPhone 5, it's about $700.
Yep.
Which is typical of the Android phones as well, the high-end Android smartphones. In Europe and Asia, you buy the phone outright, sometimes unlocked, but you
often not, mostly, unlocked.
Mostly unlocked, but you don't get a carrier subsidy, so you pay full price for your phone. So in Europe, they're used to paying $400 or $500 for the phone. Europe is a little more affluent, but now Asia is the up and coming market now, and you need a cheap phone in that $100-$200 range, unsubsidized and no contract.
Yep. And that's what they just don't have. Our next caller, Ted, from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ted. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys. You were just talking about free antivirus software, malware, and all that kind of good stuff. I have Microsoft Essential and AVG free.
Yep.
And you guys are mentioning that there's good free software out there. What do you recommend?
Well, if you check the Security Tango page, you'll see that AVG and Avast and Malwarebytes are some of our favorites. And you only need one, and you only really want ever one antivirus program running on your machine at a time, one anti-malware program running on your machine at a time. But there are a number of them that we talk about on the web page. There's stuff for Linux, there's stuff for Apple, there's stuff for Windows, depending on, you know, your operating system. And go ahead.
I say Microsoft Essentials used to be pretty good, but it's sort of fallen behind now. And we tend to see that in cycles, that, you know, today's really good program, you know, in a year or two might not be as good anymore.
Well, that's what I found out too. That's why I've deleted Microsoft Essentials and put the free AVG in there.
There you go.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have several machines that I've put both AVG, either AVG or Avast on. I like them both. I don't honestly have a preference one way or the other.
Although you said you did like the Avast update notices.
I love the Avast update notices where it actually tells you. It actually, there's a voice that comes on and says, you know, been updated, which scares the living patoot out of you at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'll tell you that right now. But other than that, I really have no preference. They're both good.
Thank you very much, guys.
Sure.
I've been liking Sophos on the Mac lately.
Yep.
And it's they have a free version for home users. It's a little hard to find because you go to their main website and it's all the corporate stuff. So usually you know, search for AVG free or Sophos free and you'll find the free version. I was just scanning a customer's machine and he had 136 Word macro virus infected Word documents.
Wow.
Because he kept saying that when he sends a document to someone, their computer says it's infected. Well, it is because the person he got it from was infected. Didn't do anything on the Mac because it's a Windows-specific virus. But he's a carrier and passing that virus on to other people inadvertently.
Right.
So even on the Mac, you should run an antivirus program.
Well, there's DNS Changer, and then there's that new one that just came out. I can't remember the name of it. I'll be talking about it Wednesday, but I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. And those are real Mac-specific things.
Yep.
And you know, the Mac people who smugly say we don't get viruses, well, you probably are already infected.
And most of them, as we mentioned earlier, are sneaky now.
Yep.
That often comes as an ad on a website, and you don't even know it's an ad, but it says your flash is out of date, you know, click here. And that was the flashback Trojan.
Yep.
That opened a back door. And then there was another one that said, you've got a virus. You better buy our Mac Protector security program. And that was a backdoor virus. And
or if you want to see this video, download this codec.
Yep, and that's a virus.
And so
they do exist. And of course, for semantics, they're Trojan horses. They claim to be one thing and are something else.
Right.
But, so you can get them on the Mac. They can infect the Mac. They're not as common as they are under Windows. But I did hear an interesting summary that about 20% of Windows users do not have an up-to-date antivirus program. It either expired and they didn't know it or they never got around to putting on it. So 20% of Windows users is about the same number as 100% of Mac users.
Yeah.
So now the theory always was that the virus writers go after the bigger target, and Windows has been a bigger target and easier to get into. But now that most Windows users are protecting themselves, the Mac is becoming a bigger target as well.
And many Mac users believe they cannot get a virus. They're adamant about it. They don't just believe it.
Yep.
They insist on it. And so they will not protect themselves.
Yep.
And so they feel smug about clicking on anything because they can't get a virus. So they're actually a bigger target than Microsoft users now.
Yep.
And Mac machines are generally nice and powerful with nice and big hard drives and nice and fast processors. So you can easily run all kinds of stuff and they won't necessarily be noticeable.
Right.
So
but
you
it is. Yeah, it is something you should still run, even on a Mac.
Always, always run an antivirus program, because the other choice is you. And we're human, and so we slip, and we only have to slip up once. And stuff happens in the background that you don't even know is going on, like I was talking about earlier. If you haven't turned off Java and JavaScript and everything else, you can download in the background a virus program, and there it is on your machine. You're done.
We used to talk about pop-up blockers to prevent these windows from popping up in front of your screen. And it was almost always an ad. So most of the browsers have pop-up blockers built in.
Right.
But now these ads are popping under the window. So you don't see them until you close the window. And, oh, crap, there's an ad. But that ad can be infected and do things without your knowledge.
Right. And often enough, they don't even bother to pop up. They're just in the sidebar.
Yeah, it's a one-pixel wide window.
Yep. A lot of Google is working very hard to scrub its ad database of these things, but Google is not the only place that puts out ads. And you can take out an ad that is a video or an ad that is a GIF, an animated GIF. And those run. They contain code, and that code runs. And that code can also contain a virus that infects your machine before the video runs. So every time you go to a website that has video, every time you go to a website that has a running any sort of animated anything, think to yourself, this could have caused the virus. Am I protected?
And the problem is that most of the technically literate people know about that, and they've turned off JavaScript, and they've turned off Flash, and they don't go to seedy neighborhoods with $20 bills hanging out of their pockets.
Right.
But the vast majority of internet users are, you know, my mom who goes to Facebook, and she's not going to know. So I get calls all the time. You know, this message popped up on my computer. What does it mean? So I remotely log in, and
which is one reason that right now, at least, I'm often recommending for the technically non-savvy user, the people who aren't ripping CDs, downloading lots of audio and video to their computer, playing offline games, to get a Chromebook.
Right. You can still play online games. You can watch online video.
And online music.
And online music, yeah.
But because there's essentially no operating system,
it's just a browser.
Right. There are essentially no viruses yet.
And there's no local storage.
Right. Well, there is now. There's actually a little bit of local storage, but it is a little bit, and it does not run. You cannot run something in local storage.
Yeah.
So that's pretty simple. And for a second computer, mom or grandma who really just wants to go play Castleville and get email, it's a really good choice because it's on in 8 seconds. The battery lasts seven, eight hours. And in general, it's just virus free. Jump to that. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we are Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Gerd from Victor on the line. Welcome, Gerd. What's up?
Not much. You guys are doing great.
Thanks.
Take it. You're talking about Java and Flash.
Yeah.
Turning it off. How do you turn it off without removing the program?
Well, you turn it off in the browser, and therefore it never calls the program.
Because one of the other issues is that you may be running Java apps on your desktop, like OpenOffice or LibreOffice, and need it on the desktop, but you don't need it in the browser. So usually in your browser's preferences somewhere, there's an option to disable Java or a checkbox to uncheck Java. Most of the newer versions of the browsers will have a site-by-site exception list. So, say, log me in uses Java. So, that website you can allow it on. I'll see.
So, it's not the program itself that's a problem.
Okay.
The problem is the code that program will run that gets downloaded by a website. So, if you tell a website never to run Java, even if it tries to download that bad code, the browser will not let Java run it, and that's what protects you.
Okay.
And I had a link on how to remove Java or disable Java in different browsers. I'll see if it's still in the link list or put it back again.
I appreciate that.
So that's really all you have to do. It's okay to leave it on your machine because, as Steve said, there are some programs you might run locally that require it.
Although, if you don't know if you need it, go ahead and uninstall it and see what happens.
But yeah, it's not Java itself. It's not Flash itself that's the issue. It's the programs that would run through it.
Gotcha. Okay.
All righty.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yep. And that's, I think, an important point. There are devices like the iPad that don't run Flash.
Right.
So you're kind of automatically protected.
Yep.
You can apparently download Flash and run it on an iPad.
Not directly. You download a browser that
right.
does remote execution. So on another computer, it executes the Flash and then sends the resulting video to you. Because it's mostly video. But it doesn't actually run Flash on your browser. It runs it on their browser and then sends you the screens.
Yeah.
So it's quite a bit slow for running video.
Right.
Most websites have stopped using Flash for video and are using the new HTML5 or H.264 video because this issue with iOS devices not doing Flash has been, what, 5 or 6 years now
right.
that the first iPhone didn't have Flash on it. And there was Flash for Android, but it was horrible. It ran really, really slow. It ate the battery to death, and Adobe gave up on it.
Yeah.
So I think you can still download an old version somewhere, but
probably somewhere
that doesn't work. So a tablet is either Android or iOS is a nice compromise between a full computer for someone who doesn't need a full computer. The Chromebook gives you a little better, bigger screen and the built-in keyboard. But the Chrome apps, there aren't quite as many as there are Android apps. Can you run Android apps on Chrome? It has to be a Chrome app.
No, it has to be a Chrome app.
It has to be a Chrome app.
And actually what Google is now doing is they've created, I forget what they call them. I actually have an announcement about it somewhere. Chrome apps. They don't even run in the browser. They run in separate windows as if they were actual things. That works on Windows and on the Chromebook and Chrome OS,
yep.
and will eventually be available under Mac and Linux as well.
Yeah, they announced the Chrome Launcher for Mac, so right. you can click a mail icon on your desktop, and it opens Google Mail in right. Chrome.
Right, right, right.
Which has always been an interesting thing. If you use webmail...
No, this is different. This opens it in a separate window.
In its own window,
app.
Yep.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave, and I want to say from Canandaigua, or is that Caledonia? Dave? Dave?
Dave, are you there?
Dave, hello.
I'm sorry, Dave.
Hello.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
Yeah. Dave, not here, man.
See, now I'm going with a classic reference.
You're going classicer than yours, actually.
What, Cheech and Chong came out before 2001?
I think so. Sure it did, didn't it?
No. 2001 was 68, 69. 2001 came out before the first mission.
I'm on the phone.
To the far side of the moon. Oh, we got the wrong person.
Oh, I got the wrong person. I got Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda.
Hi. I'm thinking to myself, Dave, where are you?
Yeah, exactly. What's up? No, it's my fault. What's up, Linda?
Okay. Google Reader is no longer. I know that. I automatically on my iPad, I put readability on there. That is the worst thing I've ever seen. I'm looking for a good Google Reader for my iPad.
Yeah, we all are.
They gave me readability, which doesn't work.
Yeah, we all are. Everybody loved Google Reader. If anybody from Google is listening, and why wouldn't they be, getting rid of Google Reader was the single stupidest thing Google has ever done.
Thank you.
Can be a big list, but this is the single stupidest. A lot of people are using Feedly.
Yeah.
Feedly.
But for some reason, every time I go to pick something, readability is automatically there. It doesn't give me a choice. Readability is automatically there.
Uninstall readability.
I did, but it's still on the Twitter list because I do Twitter, and readability is there, and I don't know how to get rid of it.
I don't know what you're seeing. I can't envision. This is in your Twitter app?
Yeah, on the Twitter app, when I go into I use Tweetcaster. Okay, I go in there and I pick an article, and it says open in browser. You know, I do that, and it says readability, and I go, I don't want that.
Well, you need to install something else in order to have another choice.
Oh, okay.
So you actually need to install another app, and I would try Feedly. A lot of people seem happy with it. I'm okay with it. It's not great, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah, back when, back when, what was that, a month ago?
Yeah.
September, yeah. When Google fully discontinued Reader, a lot of the web blogs had replacement programs and alternative program listings, and Feedly tends to be the one of the common ones.
Okay, I got one more question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I've got a Linksys N router, and, you know, I've updated it and all that, but for the past month, I'm getting a very weak signal where, you know, on my iPad, you usually see the three little things. Sometimes they'll go down to two, sometimes they'll go down to one, and then it'll pop back up. What is causing that?
Oftentimes, it's interference with something else in the house. If you have a portable phone, they can operate on the same 2.4 gigahertz as the wireless. If you're trying to go through a kitchen between the router and your iPad.
I'm in my bedroom and everything's there. But now, but what I'm thinking is I've got a very small bedroom, and I've got a entertainment center. And my computer and the router are in the same entertainment center. And I'm wondering if it's because it's too close to my computer. Could that be the interference?
Not that it's too close, but what's the entertainment center made of?
Wood.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that. Now, was it in there before when you were getting a good signal?
Yeah.
Then something else changed, and it could be you started... You bought some other new electronic device.
Or your neighbor. How far away is the neighbor's wall opposite your bedroom wall?
Well, I live in a townhouse complex where we're free, let me speak English. We're four in a row. So, we're all connected, four
in a row. Yeah.
I don't think either one of my neighbors use it. I don't know.
Well, they may not be using wireless, but they may be having something that causes interference.
They may have gotten a set of phones.
A set of phones, a microwave oven.
Right.
Oh, well, only the front of my house and the back of my house are the only two things I can see. You know, I'm in the middle. So
yep.
I'm locked on two sides.
So that is a possibility. Are you still getting a good signal, though? I mean, are you having trouble getting on the network?
Oh, no.
Then don't worry about it.
No, it's just that, I noticed that,
Right. No, I get that. But until it actually becomes a problem, don't worry about it. It's just something in the area changed.
Okay.
And it may not have been you, and there's nothing you can do about that.
Okay. So, what was the name of that browser again?
Which?
Oh, the Reader thing.
Yeah.
Oh, Feedly. Feedly. Feedly.
Okay, Feebly. I'll try and download that on my iPad.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, the Google Reader was a news reader. That Apple that Google had put out, and it was wonderful, and that and iGoogle were two of my favorite products from Google, and both of them were killed, which kind of porks me off.
And it uses an older technology called RSS, which a lot of people don't use anymore now, but a lot of us old timers still do. So what?
A lot of people still use RSS. A lot of
people.
Yeah.
I've also read about a haven't played with it yet, but a lot of people use Flipbook, which captures websites and condenses it all into a news reader for you, not using RSS.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller probably is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Dave.
It's Dave. Open the door. I got the stuff.
Dave's not here, man.
Okay. Well, that dates me a little bit, too, doesn't it?
Yeah, me too. What's up?
Well, I got three little questions here. The annoying pop-up from Zone Alarm about trying to get me to buy upgrade or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's an annoyance on my office machines. It's a real problem on my motion control machines. And is there any way to defeat that? I haven't been able to find anything by searching on the Internet for it, but go to a different firewall.
The only way to get rid of it is to actually buy it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We'll go to a different firewall.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, but I figured I'd check.
Yeah.
Another little one, Firefox, which I mostly like, I could give you a two-hour show just complaining about little things, but the one thing that bothers me is when you mouse over something and you get a pop-up from that.
Right.
Is there a way to defeat that?
That might be in the preferences. Sometimes that's called tooltips.
Yeah, those are tooltips, and you may be able to turn them off. Check your preferences. It's probably deep in them somewhere, but you might be able to turn those off.
All right. My fun question is, I'm running VirtualBox on my experimental machine here.
Yeah.
And I've got a Windows XP virtual machine, and I've also got a Linux virtual machine. My question is, can I switch from one brand of hypervisor to another and still retain those virtual machines?
Generally not.
Okay.
Generally not. VirtualBox uses, there's VirtualBox and there's another one that use the same format, but doing it would be kind of tricky.
Yeah, I don't need that right now.
Yeah.
But is there other hypervisors where that is in fact possible?
Well, again, most hypervisors need to do a whole bunch of stuff themselves internally.
Right.
So generally speaking, it's not as doable as you'd like it to be.
Okay.
It's very fiddly, very, very, very fiddly. It's a whole lot easier to just reinstall and then move over the data.
I think that covers it.
There you go.
And I did find a way to disable the pop-up tooltips, and I'm posting the link now.
Okay, perfect. Like now?
Like now. One of them is an extension.
Ooh.
So it's an extension to defeat a feature.
Right.
Or you go into About Config, and it's buried deep in there.
Right. For those of you who don't know what hypervisors are, instead of just running an operating system, like Windows or Linux or the Mac OS, you run a hypervisor, which lets you then run multiple operating systems simultaneously, each in their own little sandbox. Those are called virtual PCs. So let's say you buy a computer with 8 gig of RAM and 8 processors. You can say, I want to put 2 processors and 2 gigs of RAM into this one virtual machine, and 2 more gigs of RAM and 2 more processors into this virtual machine. And in this virtual machine, I'm going to install Windows. In this virtual machine, I'm going to install Linux. You can't install Macs in those easily.
Because they use the EFI.
Legally.
Yeah, the Macs use the EFI firmware and not BIOS firmware.
Right. But
although a lot of PCs have started shifting to EFI, too.
Yeah. I thought you might be interested in knowing what a hypervisor is and how they work. We are going to take a little bit of downtime right now, just a few minutes, so that we can pour some water over our heads and cool down our poor overworked brains. But you've only wasted an hour of your life with this show so far, so you'll have a whole nother chance to do that again on the other side of this little bit of downtime. We have Steve Ray. We have Michael Oden, who's doing an amazing job today, standing in for, who isn't here. And me, Nick Francesco. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. As we have a whole nother hour left of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, it's Soundbites, right here on member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And before we get back to the phones, speaking of stuff that Google has just ripped out of our hearts, Google Buzz has gone away. Officially. And in fact, if you were a Google Buzz user, you will find, I don't know how to close this. There it is. You will find, as of yesterday, in your Google Drive, some PDFs, which are your old posts. They've taken the liberty of turning all of your old posts into PDFs and putting them in. One is all the public posts. One is all the posts. Wait a minute, that's not quite right. One is all. Yeah, one is a snapshot of your public posts only, and one is all the posts, including public and private. So if somebody has the public address, they can see those, but not the private ones.
Well, how nice of them.
Yeah. Yep. So you don't lose them. They're still there, and they're yours. You can download them. You can update them. You can delete them. Luckily, the files do not count against your storage limits, which for me are only 105 gigs. So... I am 1% full on that. I better hurry up. And what's nice is that anything you create in the Google Drive, Google Documents formats, word processing, spreadsheet, presentation, do not count against yours. It's amazing.
Nice. Have you seen the Google Graveyard?
No. Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
All the projects Google has killed, and you can leave flowers on the grave. So right now, Google Reader has 116,000 flowers.
People loved Google Reader.
Yep.
What about iGoogle?
iGoogle is 60,000 flowers.
There you go.
And there's robots that clean the dead flowers off so that they only show 3,000 flowers at a time.
Oh, nice. That's good to know. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am having a periodic problem, which I notice most in using Gmail. I've got Firefox. This is an Asus laptop with Windows 7. And I experience a very long lag between typing and when they show up, when the characters show up on the screen. It doesn't happen all the time. It seems to be less of a problem when I first turn on the computer. But there are times when it could be 3-4 second delay.
And then does it come back again at some point, or is it once it starts slowing down, it's really slowing down forever?
Well, it seems like it's slowed down at least until the end of the day.
When you turn it off, and then tomorrow it's okay. Yeah, that does sound like your machine as opposed to, I mean, there are times when Google is just going to be slow because either it's being pounded or... and you think Google has like 100 billion servers. They snap their fingers and a whole new data center appears.
Right.
But sometimes it gets slow, but it would then speed up again. So if it never speeds up and it always just slows down, then the problem is your machine. And that generally is because something is filling up your memory and taking over your processes.
How much memory do you have in the computer?
I haven't looked in a long time. It's a relatively new computer, and
well, if you've only got 2 gig, that in itself will simply do it.
This one I think had 4.
4 shouldn't happen unless you're running a lot of stuff.
No, we're not running much of anything.
Okay. Then the first thing I would do certainly is dance a security tango and make sure you don't have a virus.
Right. You can check your task manager to see what tasks are using your processor up.
You won't see viruses there because they'll hide from the task manager.
Right.
But you'll see the legit tasks. And if there aren't a lot of them and yet the machine is slowing down, then I would dance the security tango definitely. It may well be that you've got something. The other thing is, if you never close your browser and it's up all day long, it could just be a memory leak somewhere. If you were to periodically just shut down the browser, you don't have to turn the machine off, just close all your windows, shut down the browser, start it up again.
Yeah, I have tried that a couple times, and it does seem that it speeds up a bit.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That could be certainly part of the problem. If there's some site you always leave open, like Facebook or some game that you play or whatever, that may itself be the memory leak.
And adding more memory to the computer would slow down the time it takes for the problem to happen.
Right. Would it increase the amount of time before you saw it. Yes.
Okay. I'll check those things. Thanks very much.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks.
Yeah. Bye. I'm listening to Security Now, and Steve Gibson always talks about his Firefox browser and how he has 100 tabs open, literally 100 tabs.
Yep.
He's annoyed that Firefox is taking up so much memory.
Yeah.
Well, part of that is because it's 100 tabs.
Yeah. It's apparently Firefox's fault that he opens 100 tabs. Yeah.
And leaves them open all the time.
Google has announced the launch of Chrome apps on Thursday in a bid to establish the web browser as more of a platform in itself. The new apps are similar to what the Chrome Web Store already offers, but instead of launching in the browser, they launch sans address bar and navigation buttons, essentially making them look and feel more like desktop apps you're used to on PCs and Macs. Chrome apps also work offline without an internet connection, so there's no need to stay connected if you really don't need to or really can't. The Chrome apps can launch directly from the desktop, too, using the Chrome app launcher that will be automatically installed the first time you download a Chrome app. While they're built mostly using standardized web technologies, there's also some Chrome-specific coding in there, too, so they'll only play nicely with the Chrome browser. Some of the Chrome apps available to download now include 500px, Pixlr TouchUp, The Economist Pocket Wonderlist, which is pretty cool. Gliffy, Google Keep, which is also pretty cool. And others. There are also games like Cracking Sands, Tank Riders, Spelunky, and They Need to Be Fed. As they act more like desktop apps, they can also plug into and access devices connected to your computer like storage, camera ports, Bluetooth connections, and other hardware features, which means they will also now be vectors for viruses. The move could be seen and is acknowledgement from the company that its Chromebook devices and Chrome OS could have been slightly ahead of their time in trying to provide permanently connected devices, although Google did later add offline functionality for some Chrome apps. Nevertheless, in trying to get the public at large used to installing software in a similar way that they would with desktop operating systems or on their phones, but in a browser, there's no doubt that the Chrome apps Google certainly hasn't given up on the idea of having a fully fledged platform beyond Chrome. For now, though, Chrome apps will only work on Chrome for Windows or Chrome OS. Also, I believe on Linux, because I'm running Google Keep. Anyway, give us a call. Does the idea of running Chrome apps from the desktop interest you? Give us a call. That's 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
There's a quote from one of the Google spokespeople that users may not even fully grasp what it means to be a Chrome app. And that's okay.
Yes.
you click the icon and the app runs. Most users don't care what it is behind there, what language it's written in and what platform it is. So I want to click the button and get my app.
Yeah, see, there's Google Keep right there, and it's in a separate window. So it is indeed running that way. And there's all my stuff. There's plenty of new features. And that's one more thing that will make the Chromebook a more interesting device.
Right.
I can run Google Keep outside of an area where there's Wi-Fi. I can play games outside of an area. There's Wi-Fi, all kinds of stuff. And, of course, it's early days. There are only a few apps that are available right now for that. But if you go to the Play Store and you look at... you go to apps. Thank you. Not the Play Store. The store inside Chrome. The Chrome Store. I guess that's not what they call it, but you know what I mean. The store for Chrome apps. They just call it the store, I guess. One of the choices you'll see down the left-hand side, if you go to extensions, games, themes, all of that stuff. You'll see all those things in there, and there is now going to be stuff for your desktop. So it's pretty neat, actually. Pretty neat stuff. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rupa from Rochester, New York. Hi, Rupa. What's up?
Hello.
Hi.
I have an iPad 2, and I'd like to know how I can read and write photos to the iPad short of just sending emails. I bought the camera connection kit, and that doesn't work at all. I mean, I have a SD card full of photos that are in a picture frame, and I won't even recognize them. brought that kit back. I've actually purchased several of those, and none of them seem to work.
They always work fine for me, but it expects to see a camera card from a camera. It has to, there's the weirdness in the way camera cards are, it has to be FAT32, it has to have a folder in it called DCIM, and in that folder have to be the pictures.
So a regular SD card, which comes out of the camera, and then goes into the reader for that plugs into the iPad, I've done that, but there has to be a DCIM folder on that SD card for the iPad to read it. Is that correct?
Right, that's how the camera puts the pictures on that card. It puts them in that DCIM folder, digital camera image something or other.
Yeah.
So that will let you import those pictures into your camera roll on the iPad. To actually edit the pictures, you need to download an app. Apple has their own iPhoto app for picture editing. I've also heard a lot of good things about an app called Camera Plus. But you need to find a picture editing app on the iPad. The built-in app will only display the pictures. It will do some very basic editing like cropping, but if you want to do anything more than that, you need another app.
Understood. Now, is there a way to take the photos off the iPad and write them back to the card so I can go both ways with it?
Not directly. You can connect the iPad to your computer and import the photos back into your computer.
Yeah, I was trying to avoid that. It's always very cumbersome when I do that hookup. Okay. Thank you. You've been most helpful. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Right, thank you.
Yes,
yep,
it's part of the simplicity that Apple has built into the iPad is it limits some of the higher functions that we're used to on a full computer that can do pretty much anything. But yeah, you bring your pictures into the iPad from your camera so you can view them on a bigger screen. And then the photo stream, actually you don't even need to connect your iPad to your camera, to your computer anymore. You can use Apple's free photo stream service through their free iCloud service. So any picture you bring into your iPad or take on your iPad automatically will get sent to your computer. So you take a picture on the iPad on the road and your spouse back home looking at your computer sees that picture magically pop up.
Right. We have that on the Android as well. One of the things that I love on the Android that doesn't seem to exist for Windows is a program called AirDroid, where you run it and it turns your tablet into a web server.
Yeah, there's a bunch of those.
And so I can then go on my computer and start up the browser, go to the address of my tablet,
yep,
and then move data back and forth nice and easily.
I've got a couple of those. I don't remember what their names are anymore. There's a couple specifically for photo transfers, and then there's a couple that let you transfer anything.
Yeah. Our next, and what I love about AirDroid that I use all day long is if I connect it to my phone, I can make calls,
yep,
from it, and I can do text messages from it. So it's really nice. All right, our next caller is Jim from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's up?
Hi, guys. I was trying to go on the Ask Nick website because I want to ask you a question and find out who your driveway sealer guy was that you recommended. But I can't seem to sign up for the Ask Nick, and maybe it's been restarted. Am I using the wrong browser? Or are you
No. I'm in the middle of restarting it. I've tried several things that I did not like. So I'm narrowing it down to something that will actually work. But if you just send me an email, I'll send you the guy's name.
Okay. Where do I find your email address?
Just Nick at AskNick.com.
Okay. Gotcha. Thanks.
Yep. Yeah, I've been running Ask Nick for years, and it's been off for about a year. There were some issues with it, but now there's those non-technical issues have been resolved. Now I just have to worry about getting the technical issue solved.
It seems like your last post was quite a while ago. And the last one before that was quite a while ago.
The last one was a couple of weeks ago.
August 26th, yeah. This is September now.
Yeah, okay, yeah, you're absolutely right. It was a whole week and a half ago. Yeah, thank you very much. But as you can see, the problem has been, what I've done is several things that didn't work, and I've reinstalled and uninstalled and reinstalled. And
it's the same root cause of the sound bites reconstruction, right?
No. This is a whole
no.
But this is
there are so many WordPress themes that are crap.
Well, and I don't know that WordPress is the right thing. So I've tried two or three other things. They didn't work. So now I'm looking at WordPress extensions that will let me have what I used to have was a member section and a non-member section. So if you paid the $15 a year, you got into the member section, and there were a whole bunch of things. And if you didn't pay the $15 a year, you still got some stuff, but not everything. And I could send out emails and do all kinds of other stuff. And I have to sit down and figure out what works with what, what doesn't work with what, and
find something that does it or write it yourself.
Well, and that's the difference, right?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick few-minute hiatus. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before...
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Betty from Fairport on the line. Hiya, Betty. What's up?
Hi, guys. I'm interested in transferring some old VHS video to my PC and then burn on to a DVD. And I was wondering about cables and so on. I have a 2-year-old Dell Vostro running Windows 7 64-bit professional.
Right.
There are a lot of different cable sets. Basically, you need a working VHS player, which is getting harder to find anymore.
Yeah. I know. I have one of those old things,
And that will have outputs on the back. Generally, it has composite video, which is the yellow connection.
Right.
And then the red and white for audio. Some
RCA.
Of the RCA connection. Some of the VCRs will also have S video, which is better quality, but not as common. So you need a cable that takes that composite video and typically into USB, and then USB into your computer and software that captures it.
Okay.
There are some commercial programs. Roxio makes one called Easy VHS to DVD.
Yeah.
List price is $69. It includes the cable and the software. There are some really cheap cables. I see one for $6 on eBay. I don't know how much I'd trust that.
Well, here's the problem. It's not the outputs from the VCR. It's the inputs to the Vostro.
Okay. Right. So typically they come in USB, and the software reads the video signal from that USB, records it as a video file.
Okay.
And then you convert that to the MPEG-2 to put on a video DVD.
Okay. Would I say that as a WMV file or?
No, it has to be an MPEG-2 if it's going to go onto
MPEG-2.
Onto a DVD. And typically, your DVD burning software will do that for you.
Oh, okay.
Which is something like Roxio Toast or Nero, whatever Nero's is. So Roxio has this nice all-in-one kit that has the cables and the software. $69. It's not that inexpensive. If you have a lot of tapes. Generally, that's something you'd want to do yourself. If you only have a couple of them, there are services in town that will do that for you.
Right.
They usually charge either by the tape for VHS or by the foot for 8mm.
Yeah, I went that route for some old Beta tapes.
Beta, God love you.
Yeah, really old. So there's something on Amazon called an EasyCap USB 2.0 audio video capture adapter, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's about $9.
Right, that's probably just the cable, and it may not be very good quality. So then you need the software to do the capture and the software to do the burn, which is usually Roxio itself.
Right, you get the Roxio bundle, you got it all in one, you know it's all going to work together.
Right.
And then there are higher quality ones. Who was it? Started with a P. It was about a $200 box that did high quality video capture, but VHS is fairly low quality to begin with, compared to computers today.
Yeah.
And actually, the Roxio software, they're doing a special right now for $50 on their website.
Well, they are.
Yeah, so that's the software and all the cabling.
Excellent.
Jump on it.
I will post this link.
Thank you so much for your help. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Thanks, Betty.
Yep.
And yeah, so, yeah, so you can take your video and upload it to YouTube or burn it on a physical disc, although we're seeing physical discs are kind of falling by the wayside now.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to share over the internet.
Well, but you still got to have the storage somewhere,
you still got
to
have the storage, yeah.
That's the problem. All right, our next caller is Paul from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
Hi. I wonder if you guys could give me a hand getting some more volume out of my desktop, so that I don't miss any of your pearls of wisdom, because I listen to your show on the computer.
Haven't missed anything, but thank you.
It's a Windows 7 HP unit, and your levels are low. And when I click on the speaker icon, the slider is up at the top, but the little green levels bar is only about a half inch or 3/8 inch high. And I've been into the mixer, double-clicking the speaker, and everything's at 100% slider.
Do you have volume controls on your speakers themselves, separate from the computer button?
The speakers in the monitor.
Oh, speakers and monitors are crap.
Okay, well,
they generally are, yeah.
Generally are, and they're very low quality and they're very low volume. So you can get a decent set of external powered speakers for $10 or more. You get a really good set for hundreds.
Okay.
Or even a cable you can plug into your headphone jack on your computer and plug it into your stereo system if you have one of those and listen to the stereo. But yeah, generally the speakers inside monitors are relatively low quality.
Yeah, because it was just I go to some other radio stations and I get higher levels.
Their levels are higher to start with. Ours are not terribly high to begin with.
Okay. I just thought I should be able to adjust the volume till they distort, but I guess not.
Well, it depends on the input source you're getting. Now, I'm looking at our, and I see Mike looking at our levels. Our levels are peaking, so it's I don't know. We couldn't put up much more power without distorting ourselves.
Right.
Well, and then some of it is the compression. And then you're listening on the computer, right, not over a radio?
Right.
Yeah, so some of it is the compression through the computer to get to the internet.
Okay. So that just surprised me how low the level was.
No, I do understand that, but in general, you will be happier with a pair of external speakers with their own volume knob.
More wires.
Well, you can go wireless speakers, but they cost more.
Okay. I was just wondering whether there's some other hidden slider somewhere that I had missed.
Sometimes there's a button called preamp. I've seen that on a few in that mixer setting. If you have all the sliders all the way up, sometimes I've seen one called preamp that has an extra slider, so you can go above 10. You can go all the way to 11.
I'll take a peek and see whether I don't recall seeing that, but we'll try it. Otherwise, we'll go for an external.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
A lot of these monitors talk about, we've got built-in speakers. We have a 2-watt speaker in.
Yeah,
that's nothing.
There's nothing there. But I agree with you. There are some places that I go to where the sound is pretty low. I have external powered speakers, but they're not. There are still places you go to that it's too low.
Plug into a 220 line instead of 120.
Yeah, there you go.
That'll double the power.
220, 221, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's up?
I just heard a ringtone. Is that calling for me?
Yeah, that's you.
Okay. Say, I do from time to time some presentations using PowerPoint.
Yeah.
And I would like to include some snippets of material from documentary-type DVDs.
Right.
The snippet might be 10 seconds at most, maybe 30 seconds. How can I clip that out of the DVD? What software would I use? And what would you suggest I put it onto so that I have it right there available very quickly to project?
The legalities of that are tricky.
Yeah, legalities aside.
Yeah.
I'm willing to accept the information that way.
Yeah, getting data off a DVD can be tricky because it's I hate to say designed not to come off, but it sort of is. There are a couple of programs. Are you Mac or Windows?
Windows.
Okay. I know there's one for the Mac called Rip It.
You should be able to start with something like Movie Maker. That's a Windows program that's free. Windows.microsoft.com/blah blah blah. Movie Maker, Steve.
We need something that can import an MPEG-2 feed off the DVD.
Yeah, it imports videos. I don't know if it imports them off of.
Yeah, just to give the formats.
The DVD.
How would it particularly know if it was already a composite signal?
It wouldn't if you already had.
Well, yeah, you could use the analog hole, which a video capture, like we were talking about the first person. You plug the output of your DVD player video signal to the input of a video capture card, and we call that the analog hole that stops all this copy protection. But there are programs that will take the digital file directly from the DVD. Convert it into the computer. Handbrake, that's the one I was trying to think of.
Yeah, I don't think I need to get quite that high in quality, I think. And incidentally, I was listening to the earlier caller. Unfortunately, I didn't catch it until about the middle of what she was calling about, but it sounded like it related.
Yeah, there's USB capture card, so it's composite at one end and USB on the other end, and you plug into your computer and plug that into a composite source like a VCR or DVD player,
mm-hmm.
And that will import that video into your computer. With a DVD, it's already digital video. excuse me. So you can copy that in directly to the computer with a program like Handbrake, and that will copy the DVD into your computer, into a video format that is readable by other programs.
Right, but there's a whole bunch of free ones, AviSynth, Vitamox, Blender VSE, VideoLAN has their movie creator, Virtual Dub. There's a bunch of them for Windows.
And that'll store it onto the hard drive?
And that they will do they have various capabilities. One of which is the first thing you want to do is find the video, whether it's coming off of the web or a DVD, and then getting it to the hard drive is often a separate issue. I mean, it's gonna be different for every medium you're trying to pull from.
Well, it's gonna be a DVD.
Well, then you need DVD ripping software. And some of these will and some of them won't. There's actually a great a list of video editing software on Wikipedia that lists all of the available free, proprietary, everything else software that's out there and what operating system it goes to. And then each of those has their own page so you can see what the features and things are. But once you've ripped it, then it's just a matter of getting it into a format that...
Yeah, ripping is first, and then after it's ripped, you can edit.
Right.
Okay. And what would be the format to store it, perhaps, on, say, the hard drive?
MPEG-4, usually.
MPEG-4.
Yeah. Or even if for Windows you can use WMV, but MPEG-4 is a generic cross-platform standard for video.
Right. On Microsoft's own website, in terms of video, they will take ASF, AVI, MPEG, and WMV into PowerPoint.
Does it say MPEG-2?
It just says MPG or MPEG.
Yeah,
and
that's probably not MPEG-2.
As a, I guess I would call it a slide within PowerPoint. Or do I have to go to?
Then you would embed that into one of the things that you can do is embed things into a slide.
Okay.
And embedding a video is something PowerPoint will do.
Right.
And will that dictate which of those formats that you just mentioned might be used?
No, we'll use all four of those.
Okay.
ASF, AVI, MPG or MPEG, and WMV.
Okay. Good. Thank you very much.
There you go. Good luck. It's a pretty cool thing. I've seen a number of them that do that, a number of presentations that have video in them, and it's always kind of nice, actually.
The real big trick is that there's a lot of fake video ripping software around. So you Google, bring a video into my computer, and you're going to get a lot of less than reputable programs that basically there's a free open source program called FFmpeg, and it's not very user-friendly, but that's what all of these other programs use. So there's a bunch of less than reputable software companies will take FFmpeg and package it and call it video import, and they'll take another one and package it and call it import video, and you get all these ads and software at wildly different prices, I've seen even. It's all based on FFmpeg, which is free, and that's why one reason I like Handbrake, because it's also free.
Right. Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a Mac, and I'm using Microsoft Outlet 2011 as my primary email.
Yep.
Couple of weeks ago, I tried emailing my niece some pretty large files of pictures. At any rate, they didn't go.
Yep.
And now every time I open Outlook, there's a little corner that says sending, trying to send those two files. Of course, it never gets to it,
right.
But it's also hanging up my ability to send anything else out.
Yep.
I have done everything I know to do and tried searching Google and what have you for an answer to how to kill this and get rid of it. And what I'd like to know is, how do I do that? It doesn't seem that Microsoft offers any help that I can understand, or from what I tried, it just didn't work.
You want to go into your Outbox and delete those messages.
Into the Outbox?
Right. In Outlook or pretty much any other mail program, the inbox is where your mail comes in.
Right.
And then there's an Outbox where your mail is waiting to go out. And then you want to delete it from that Outbox.
I don't see Outbox. It's not. I have inbox, drafts, sent items, deleted items, junk mail, and then I have something here, smart folder, that has, when I open it, it says flagged mail, high priority mail, overdue, but I have no Outbox.
Well, look in those, but also look in draft.
Look in draft. There is nothing in drafts. Drafts empty.
Okay, then it's not draft. Look in those other things that you, the high priority, all of that stuff.
It may be in sent.
Sent would be my top option.
The problem is not Outlook, it's email. Email in general was designed for raw text, which is very small. So most email providers, so the service you're getting your email through, generally limits messages to about 4 or 5 megabytes. If you try to send a message bigger than that, your mail server will reject it. And then your mail client, your Outlook program, will try to send it again because it doesn't realize it's too big to send.
Right.
Typically, when you want to send a lot of pictures like that, you do it through a website, Flickr, Facebook, Apple's PhotoStream even, to send pictures through websites.
Okay. Somehow, Outbox just open. I don't ask you how, but
when,
here I am with the pics.
The Outbox,
there you go.
The Outbox only shows when it's actually sending something. After it's sent, it goes into the sent box and the Outbox disappears.
Right. So you can now open up your Outbox, select those, and delete them.
Just did it.
There you go.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
As usual, a lifesaver.
Yep.
Thank you.
Have a great
and
you
I just
too.
Yep. I just found the instructions from Microsoft. You tell it to work offline, and then it can't send it, so it stays in the Outbox.
Oh, there you go. All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 42 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, hurtling headlong into our 25th year on the air. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Roden. And at 46 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. We have a question from the Google Hangout that we do every week. It's from our friend Mark. He says, on my iPad, I have several apps where an update is available. I selected update all, I selected update all, but it's reading comprehension, fifth grade stuff. But several did not update, and the icons are dimmed and won't start up. How do I get these programs to be active again?
Oftentimes that can happen if you don't have enough free disk space to start the updates, especially if you have a lot of updates to download. Usually the iPad tells you if there's not enough free space before it starts, but sometimes it doesn't notice that, doesn't calculate how big each one of them are. Or if your internet connection is slow or disconnects. While it's downloading, they can get stuck trying to download. There's a couple of things you can try. First is just rebooting the iPad. Hold the sleep button down until it says, do you want to turn off, and turn it off. A kind of joke, it is a computer. It needs to reboot every now and then. and so leave it off for a minute or two, then turn it back on again. And oftentimes that will fix it. The other thing you can do is if you tap and hold on the icons, they all start wiggling, and that's how you move them around. When there are a lot of updates happening, you can tap on an icon, and it will pause that download. And you tap again, and it resumes the download. It will then say waiting when it's paused. So that can let you prioritize. So if you have five downloads, you can pause four of them to let that fifth one start downloading again. That will often sort of kick in to start it downloading again, or even pause them all and then unpause one of them. But oftentimes just rebooting can help that. The other thing you can often you may have to do is sign out, go into settings and sign out of your Apple ID, reboot, and then sign back into the Apple ID. But I usually get that when I have too much on my iPad and there's not enough room for a free app. Not enough room for the app update. I especially get a lot of games that we play with my son. So, you know, Plants vs. Zombies is 2 gigs and Real Racing is 3 gigs. And my 16-gig iPad doesn't feel very big anymore.
Yeah, right.
And I've also posted a link to some other suggestions, too, for that.
Yeah, and he says he never turns it off, so that may be the problem right there.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, we tend to forget that our tablets, whether they're iPad or Nexus or whatever they are, we tend to forget they're computers.
Yep.
And that some of the same things that work with regular computers will work with those. Reboot. Yep. When in doubt, reboot.
And what's interesting is that the iPad and Android tablets of today are as powerful as our big desktop computers were 10, 15 years ago.
Yep.
We used to play a game called Marathon on the Mac, developed by Bungie. It's sort of the precursor to Halo. In fact, Halo was supposed to be a Mac-only game until Microsoft bought them and turned it into the Xbox premiere.
Yeah, right.
And then eventually came out for Mac. So Bungie, ages ago, made the Marathon series. There are actually three games in the series. Made it open source. And someone wrote an iPad version of Marathon and the two sequels. And it's free now on the iPad. And it plays exactly like it did on my big PowerPC computer, you know, 10 years, 15 sure. years ago. Because the iPad is more powerful. And in fact, the graphics are exactly the same, pretty poor.
Yeah.
And so for $10, you can buy better graphics.
Nice.
So the game is free, and if you want better graphics, you can pay a little bit of money. But it's exactly the same game. The same bugs are in it because it's all the same source code.
Hold on. We have just a few minutes left, and as always, a whole bunch of people have called right at the end. Some of you will not get on. Oh, well. But we're starting with Ted from Fairport. What's up, Ted?
Hi. I have a network question. I have four computers that are connected through a switch, and I want to get them onto the internet. If I just run a wire from my router, which is hooked up to the internet, to the switch, would that connect all the other four?
Theoretically, it's supposed to, yes. If you plug it into the correct port on the switch. Some of them have a separate LAN port. Okay. Some do not. It depends on the switch model.
Well, mine does not have a separate LAN port.
Yeah, then just plug it in anywhere and you're on your way.
Sometimes the switch will say uplink port.
Right, sometimes it's called uplink.
Then the uplink port gets plugged into your internet router.
Right.
Okay. Simple enough. Thank you very much.
That was easy. That's the way that works.
A lot of internet routers have a switch built in, so you can plug two or three wired computers into the switch, and then all the wireless computers you want anyway.
Right. Most people don't need much more than a few ports, but some do.
Yep.
Our next caller is Chris from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's up?
Well, you guys were talking about AVG and Avast a little while ago.
Yeah.
So I went to click on my AVG. That's what I have installed.
Good.
And I don't see it on my toolbar. And so when I went into my start programs, I found it there, you know, the icon. I clicked on it, and it says that it's being prevented from Event Viewer.
Uh-oh.
That's what I said.
I would immediately dance the security tango.
Okay.
It may well be that you've got something that's caused it to fail. And that happens sometimes. Like we always say, it's a game of leapfrog. The bad guys put something bad in and the good guys fix it and the bad guys find something else and the good guys close that hole. So you may have come in at the wrong point of that leapfrog game. So dance the security tango and we'll see what happens from there. Let us know.
Well, I just reinstalled my Internet Explorer because it was acting weird, so I just took the whole thing off, and it's been updating,
mm-hmm.
and I'm up to Internet Explorer 8. And just this morning, I think it asked me to set some, you know, wanted me to set some rules, I guess, on it.
Yeah, you really want to dance security tango.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, Chris.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. That's at securitytango.com.
And Internet Explorer 8 is pretty old.
Pretty old.
So something might have snuck in through IE8 because Microsoft hasn't gotten stopped patching a lot of the old IEs.
Yeah, they don't patch anymore. So that's a real problem. And you need to be very careful. Particularly when you're using an older version of anything, any browser whatsoever, right. Whether it's IE or Firefox or Chrome or Safari or anything else.
She might want to switch to a different browser, too.
Right. Something that's newer. If she's still running XP, 9 may not work well for her, 10 may not work well for her. So she might prefer at that point to run something like Chrome or something else.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the antivirus programs, AVG, Avast, things like that, they come out with their own major updates. And that update oftentimes will signify that they stop updating the old versions.
Right.
So if she's running perhaps an old version of AVG, it may have stopped working, which allowed something to get in too. Generally, they're supposed to warn you when they expire or
well, and they might have. A lot of times, you know, we're used to just clicking.
Click okay. Well, the earlier caller, you know, just watch the semantic countdown.
Right.
Countdown every day, and then it got to zero, and things quit working.
Yep. And that happens, and we all do it. We all see it, and we think, oh, I'll fix it tomorrow, and then...
Tomorrow never comes.
So it's a real problem that we all have. Keeping this stuff up to date is in fact, a responsibility. I get that. But it's also a necessity. We're really at the point nowadays where you, unless you're using something like a Chromebook, you really can't just ignore this stuff. All right, that's it.
You say that's what we're here for.
That's exactly. You can grow us. That's right. We're here. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I do want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Please call earlier and more often, Chicago style calling. Next week, we just when the phones pile up at the end, we're done. So don't go away because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. It's some great stuff. Don't miss it. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You apparently aren't sick of us yet, so we'll keep coming back until you are. This is Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.